Zone from Fox Sports.
This is Jochen Graf.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
You are listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
Get off the pitch!
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Ball's going to bounce down. It's free in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night, April 15th, 2000, Corona 20, in case you lost track of days and times and things like I have. You are listening to another episode of the Unused Substitutes. We are live on Radio St. Pete. We are part of the Beautiful Game Network, and we are presented by Roughneck Scarves. Steven, did you know it's Wednesday, or did only the fact that we're doing a show remind you of that fact?
No, I'm diligent about keeping dates and times. So I mean, I keep a calendar on the wall. Like, I'm marking days off. Like, I'm weird like that. I'm very weird like that.
I've got a calendar on the wall too, but it mostly just covers up holes from other things that were there before. That's the main purpose. I did make, I don't want to say, you know, our continuing sponsorship, our ongoing partnership with Roughneck Scarves. I did make a purchase from them recently, and I'm waiting its arrival supposedly at the end of the month. They are making face masks.
That's fantastic. That's awesome.
For like $10 a pop, like cotton face masks, like full knit, like they, I guess it's going to be like a scarf thing. So I went ahead and ordered one of those, and it's supposed to be, well, I ordered a couple. I got one for my wife and daughter too. So we'll wait and see what shows up, but anything to help someone out that has helped us. So if you're looking for a face mask thing, my long roundabout way of doing this, now that the state of New York has mandated them and may not be too long before others do as well. And, you know, they're all black. Like when this is all over, you can wear them to a game and still look pretty cool, I guess, if you want to put a patch or a pin or something on it and you'll be all set. It's been what, 2 weeks? We didn't do this last week. How have you been keeping yourself occupied?
I'm a gamer, and not video games. So I'm painting models. I'm playing board games. I'm, you know, geeking out a lot, like you know, Henry Cavill, like you know, Superman.
Yeah, everybody's he's painting Warhammer figures or something.
Yes, he is. He's a huge Warhammer fan. He is a Warhammer guy. So. Now keep in mind, I don't play Warhammer or 40K. I do mostly historical stuff, but I do Battlefleet Gothic, which is the Warhammer 40K game in space. And I've got dozens of fleet. I'm actually a published author for that game, in the official stuff. So yeah, I'm an actual rules lawyer for that game. Believe
cool.
it or
I've
not.
Been, I've been doing my D&D on Friday nights, downloading all the free stuff that they're putting out every day on their website as additional material. So, and then still doing my job and trying to help my wife do her job and help my daughter do her school stuff as well. So I don't think I've lost track of time because I've been sitting around doing nothing. I've lost track of time because it's like I start off around 9 o'clock, and then I'm usually done 9-10 o'clock at night or whatever, whether I'm creating new assignments for the next day. I got to make a quiz for Friday for these kids now. But, you know, we kind of said we're going to do every other week from now on. And I honestly think I woke up today and I'm like, you know, we've got like two things to talk about. And then the content gods just started dropping bombs all over the place today, especially in the last like hour and a half. And we got a lot to talk about. So we'll hop into it. We'll start off with EUSL. What's the latest update from there?
So EUSL is going great. The Rowdies and Ralph's Mob, represented by Carlos and David. No losses again this weekend because we're awesome. Carlos came in, played somebody from Indy and won his game 2-1. That improves him to 3-0 on the season. Hell to the yeah. And David, he played against a gentleman from Hartford. They ended up in a draw 2-2. He is now 1-1-1 on the season. So huge congratulations to both of those guys for another good weekend, another good time, another good play. Carlos is ridiculous at
He's
that
really
game.
He's really good.
I mean, it's mental to me. Granted, I suck at the video games. I suck at them. I suck at them. But that being said, I think the strength for Carlos, in my mind, is offense. Because his – and forgive me if I'm using the improper terminology. I think it's – what his use of – I think it's like the trick stick on the right analog stick is fantastic. He really has a really, really good eye for timing those maneuvers correctly. And I think that's his strength. That's why there was a joke on there about, like, you know, he would have missed shots, but he never misses, you know. He really, really, really is good on offense. I think David's strength on the reverse side is actually in defense. And I know he's hypercritical of his own defensive play because there was, especially this weekend, there was a really weird breakdown. But David is fantastic at timing his tackle button pressing. And it's really cool because that's something, if I'm being honest, defense for me, I think, is the thing that I suck at the most because I don't know how to time those things at all. But no, I mean, seriously, huge congratulations to both those guys. This is obviously a lot of fun watching them kick butt and, you know, having something to talk about, sort of, kind of.
So they'll have games coming up again this weekend, I assume. You can follow either Ralph's Mob on Twitter or follow Carlos at Carlos TPA 10 at David follow David, which is at Davey DAVI from Tampa. They'll announce it. You can go watch them on Twitch. I missed last week's games because we were getting all the Easter stuff ready for my daughter and for, you know, everything we were doing around the house. But I did go back and watch some of the clips and the replays. So good on them. It's glad to see that we're doing well so far. Kind of the big thing that I was going to focus on tonight before all the other news dropped was how the Rowdies and the Rays are staying involved in the community. We've talked about some of the social media stuff they've been doing, some of the video stuff they've been doing, but how they're doing kind of charitably in the community as well. There's a whole lot of other stuff now, but we'll go ahead and talk about this stuff first before we get into all the other stuff. Tampa's mayor, Jane Castor, announced the One Tampa initiative. It's direct rent, mortgage, or utility, water, gas, and electric payments for eligible individuals, families, and businesses for 1 month. The idea is that it's kind of a bridge between now and when state and federal funds become available. Some people may be in the same boat as me waiting for these stimulus checks, and then I checked the IRS website today, and it said it was unable to determine my eligibility. When I'm like, I've filed my taxes last year. I'm still paying my taxes from the last 2 years. Like, it should be easy to tell me yes or no. So if they're in that same boat, they're going to be able to get money from this. The Rays and Rowdies, it said donated $100,000. I don't know if that was per team or all together. All the other sports teams in the area have donated as well. The teams are also involved in Feeding Tampa Bay. They've donated 1 million meals, committed to match 1.5 million more. And as far as for how they're taking care of their employees and their kind of independent contractors, they announced this, all the MLB teams announced this like $1 million fund to help support their employees per team. So the way the Rays and Rowdies are dividing this up, the Rowdies are included as part of this. About 600 staffers, such as ushers, ticket takers, guest services, grounds crew, and the Raise Vision production department are eligible for $1,000 grants and about 700 concession, security, cleaning services, freelance workers like merchandise, stuff like that, are eligible for $500 grants. And then if there's whatever leftover there is, they're going to kind of reserve for extreme kind of hardship cases or other things that come up. So it's good to see that they're, you know, looking after the community where their fans are as well, too, and also reaching out to some of these employees that, you know, aren't direct full-time daily employees of the teams, but provide these kind of game day and match day services that we're all kind of dependent on.
So the big, big news that dropped about, I don't know, an hour ago.
Just about,
I mean, this is literally off the hot of the presses right now. It was rumored last couple of days, some talk about it on national level sources, and it was indeed confirmed. The major initiative from U.S. Soccer for the Development Academy to try and create an elite level of academy that is organized on a national scale is now officially dead. They have gone ahead and canceled it. Of course, they're blaming coronavirus, but I think that's more of an immediate on the short term. I think there are some longer term implications as far as reasonings there, but it is officially dead. Now, how does this affect the local teams that are involved in the DA? Because if I'm not mistaken, you've got TBU, you've got Clearwater Chargers. Outside of those two, I don't really know. I think those are the only two in the area. How does this directly affect those guys? That's a great question, because right now, no idea. More than likely in the short term, what this means is that they're going to be reorganizing themselves. Those groups of players will have to find a place to play, whether that ends up being something like the ECNL organization or something like that. Now, here's the thing that has been talked about, kicked around, and something that I personally think is really the driving factor for the U.S. Development Academy news. MLS and USL have obviously been talking about creating their own academy setups that are internal to their own teams. Now, MLS has kind of softened that standpoint to a degree by stating that they would be interested in potentially having out-of-market clubs and organizations be a part of their academy. USL, if I'm not mistaken, if you look through the USL Eastern and Western conferences, there are already teams that are not in specific relation to a USL franchise, but that participate in the USL Academy. I personally think that I see the trend. To be honest, when you see the MLS Academy system get stronger and get bigger, and you see the USL Academy thing get created, getting bigger, getting more organized, to me, the Development Academy was always going to be the third wheel on that. Because I don't see how you're going to get a situation for a national level organization when all of that recruiting should realistically be happening at a local level for the local teams, specifically the pro teams. So to me personally, I kind of thought this was always going to be something that happened, whether I think Corona, the whole COVID issue ended up being a catalyst random time. But I think this was something that was always going to happen, if you take my opinion on it. But how does this change things in the short term? I mean, obviously there's a lot of ex-rowdies involved with both of those organizations, mm-hmm. running teams, running leagues specific to the DA side of things. People like Blake Wagner, Andres Arango. How does this affect those guys in the short term? That's a great question. Those leagues realistically would what? Really start doing tryout season and playing in summer. You're talking June, July, August is kind of when the calendar year sort of resets for a lot of those organizations for tryouts and players moving around. So you've got a really weird deadline. You've got like a month and a half, 2 months for these organizations that were involved in the USDA to getting themselves set up on the next year's schedule. So, I mean, that provides a very, very weird problem for them. Again, I don't know really what a solution would be. Because especially considering USL Academy is so new, I don't think they're in a position to absorb a lot of those clubs. I don't know if they've got, I mean, they've got what, a half a season of experience really? I don't even know if they've necessarily got a full year in, because I think it was brand new last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. And, you know, we don't know the full extent, but we know that there have been furloughs at USL headquarters, Peter Wilt being kind of the more prominent one. It's probably not a situation they're set up to handle right now. Just looking at TBU alone, I'm on their website right now. They're running, five full DA teams from U13 up to U19. They've also got four separate pre-DA teams for U11s and U12s. They've got their own program director, former Rowdy Blake Wagner. Now, TBU is also running programs in teams in what's called the ECNL, the Elite Clubs National League, which has kind of been this competitor to DA that's sprung up, that's independent of U.S. soccer. And they do run a boys and girls program, separate boys and girls program, so that could be a possibility. North Carolina FC has already tweeted that their teams will be moving to ECNL for the next season. And that is a league that the current president of U.S. soccer is one of the board members of that team or of that organization. So, you know, that could be a way that a lot of places go. MLS, like you're talking about it, MLS announced today that they are launching a new elite youth competition platform, which will provide year-round high-level matches for MLS club academy teams and non-MLS academy teams that previously participated in the U.S. Soccer Development Academy. And I was reading another article on The Athletic, and we're going to talk a lot about stuff that's on The Athletic tonight. I know we were talking about just before we came on the air, they are offering a free 3-month subscription, so you can go check out some of these articles. They don't sponsor us or anything, but you know, maybe they should. Possibly. But because I don't want to just sit there and read out all their articles. That's kind of boring listening to me read. But there's definitely been a split in MLS about whether or not to include non-MLS clubs like USL clubs or other just non-pro affiliated organizations as well, because they want to maintain a particular standard. Supposedly Don Garber and kind of the majority of MLS owners were open to having USL clubs in well. So we're going to have to see what kind of steps, you know, which way the rallies are going to go. I think there'll be an outlet for them. There's a whole lot of stuff we're not going to know answers to for a while, but I mean, the biggest thing right now is the U.S. Soccer Federation has gotten themselves out of the developing younger, like, youth players. It's going to be the pro clubs in this country now that will drive this kind of development. You might see a bigger emphasis now on high school and college soccer returning, because that's going to be a place for them to develop. You might see changes in the way that those competitions are structured or some of the rules that they go with as well, too. There's going to be a lot of movement going on, basically. And this was all part of, you know, in addition to shutting down the program, U.S. Soccer laid off a number of employees, and I believe furloughed some as well, too. So, you know, I think a lot of places, and I was reading about Disney the other day, about how they're starting to imagine how they're going to look when they come out, when this situation is passed. And I think you're seeing a lot of places start to, you know, kind of saying, well, you know, we'd always talked about doing this or doing that. Now we kind of have a reason to. We have a pressing need to kind of remake the way we do business and sports and U.S. soccer. And I imagine the other clubs in MLS and USL, everything, it's not going to be the end of change going on in the country.
Absolutely. Again, I'm a huge proponent. I know a lot of players and not just players, fans too, for that matter. I know there's a lot of criticism, and some of it rightly so, on a lot of those restrictive contract rules when it comes to MLS, specifically in regards to discovery rights, homegrown contracts, Generation Adidas contracts. I think there's like seven or eight different types of contracts you can sign with Major League Soccer, if I'm not mistaken, overall.
I think, didn't they get rid of Generation Adidas, though? Isn't that?
I think this past year was the final year or something to that nature. But like up until this point, right, that's been a thing. And I know that, like I said, rightfully so, there's some valid criticisms of that model, as it is confusing and it is kind of strange in the context of world soccer, certainly. Personally speaking, I think USL should be trying, or possibly, or maybe the Players Association could introduce this as a part of their agreements, introducing some rules that are close to that. Something like if a player, you know, graduates high school or something, the last development academy, USL academy that he was with, the professional team that is operating that academy would get first rights for that player as a signed player if they choose to go to lower division American soccer in terms of USL. Personally speaking, I think that would encourage teams to invest in their academies, because if they can identify and capture that local youth talent into their system or their branded system, as it were, then it would only encourage teams to put more focus on that, because that's going to be cheaper than signing X MLS veterans. You know, signing a player out of high school hypothetically is going to be cheaper than some of those guys. Hypothetically, I'm personally thinking that that's the right way to go. And I think that goes hand in hand with the future of rapidly evolving the USL Academy. And I think that's the wave of the future anyways. I think that's the right way to go. I guess a lot of this just depends on, well, there's two things that are going to depend on this. One is how aggressive is MLS and how aggressive is USL going to be about trying to potentially implement their own academies and making them more prominent. But I think the other thing too, and this is always going to be the question, not every market penetrates every major city and every minor city when it comes to professional soccer. Everybody knows that. There are cities and communities all across the United States that has no presence in professional soccer at all. But there are massive youth organizations that are still existing in those communities. In any type of system, those are the organizations that you have your biggest question mark. How do you incorporate those teams that don't have an obvious partner? Where do those kids go to learn? Where do those kids get noticed? How do those kids get incorporated into the overall system if the system becomes club soccer specific, in terms of pro club soccer specific? That, I think, is always going to be the big question mark for me. So it'll be interesting to kind of see what happens. And it's not necessarily because there are not players or organizations or even parents that want their kids involved in those organizations. A lot of it has to do with those directors of coaching, those board members of those individual clubs that want to run their own operation and don't want anybody telling them otherwise. They don't want to give up control. We've got a couple of those perfect examples right here in the Tampa Bay area too, that are infamous for running their things their own way. And they don't want to be told anything else. They want to do it however they want to do it. I mean, it's the power of monopoly, right? I don't see a situation in the long run where those smaller organizations that kind of, or even big organizations that try and run things independently, I don't see a situation where those organizations stay successful. I just don't see it necessarily. But then again, I've kind of been thinking that in my head for about 10, 15 years now, and they still are cranking them out. So who knows? I mean, it's... Youth soccer in this country is crazy because it's a business, and it really is a business. No matter how you slice it up, forever it has been a business. And trying to emphasize or create a way to change that profit-making machine, because even if it's a nonprofit, let's face it, it's still a profit to somebody. Trying to change that model to something that's more developmental focused that's a monumental task. And that might, I mean, we're all looking for a short-term solution, and in all honesty, that would be awesome, but I think that's a generational thing. I don't think that's something that you're going to solve in a year or 2 years or 10 years. That might not be a culture you can eradicate for 20, 25 years, quite frankly, because it might not be until you get a lot of these older, you know, directors of coaching, these guys that have been in it for 30 years, until they cycle out and age out of those respective programs and positions, you're not going to see a whole lot of change in the short term, at least towards a true nonprofit club centered or pro club centered methodology. I just, that's how I see it. But I think today's news is good. I don't think U.S. Soccer DA was the right answer. I never thought it was personally. I think this kind of encourages the MLS and USL to get more aggressive in the academy system, and I think that's a good thing.
I mean, you can play this out, and it becomes one of the outcomes maybe that leads these clubs to be more involved in their local communities in terms of developing this talent, and that builds a more solid foundation, base of support for some of these teams that have been lacking it so far. There, it's nothing but speculation at this point. It's going to be something we'll keep an eye on for, I assume, quite a while. Hopefully in the more short term, meaning we might actually get a USL season this year. A lot of stuff has come out the last few days about when USL might come back, what it'll look like when it'll come back, what are some other things the league's been looking at during this downtime. There's been a ton of stuff. There was an article on SI, which this is before when they still had some kind of credence in when it came to reporting soccer, an interview with Jake Edwards. The big point coming out of it is that he does not expect the USL to participate in Open Cup this year, that there's going to be so many midweek and weekend games as they try and get this get through this schedule, that it's not something that they're going to be able to do. They were modeling a return to play in July. Don't know what they're looking at in terms of with or without crowds. The USL doesn't seem to be a league where you can play without crowds. The leagues and clubs are dependent on match day revenue, unless we're going to start paying to have pictures of ourselves put on mannequins in the stands like they're doing in, I think it was a Chinese baseball league or some other leagues are doing some of that. But, I mean, we've already paid for season tickets, so we have to pay again to have fake us not in the stadium. I don't know. There's stuff out there. One of the other things that came out today, another article from The Athletic, USL is considering a plan to split the two conferences into two divisions each. It would be kind of like the way the NFL does their schedule. I'm not going to go through the entire article, but I want to read a couple of the important points. Scheduling would be an easier task with the division alignment for the 2020 season. Teams could play their divisional opponents twice, home and home, for a total of 14 or 16 games. Because with the imbalance of teams in the East and the West, there would be one division in the Eastern Conference with only 8 teams. And the way that the author of the article, Jeff Reuter, kind of drew up his map of what it could look like, it would be the Rowdies in the 8-team conference. I didn't save the map of who was where. You still have the article?
I do.
Pull that up, and I'll go through here. I'll read the rest of this, and then we'll talk about who could be in each team. Given the imbalance in the East, the Southeast would likely have to play a third game against two opponents to make the math add up. Further, USL is considering a streamlined playoff structure which would only see the top two teams in each division make the playoffs. This would gut the postseason from a relatively bloated contest between 10 teams per conference to an 8-team knockout. You just skip right to the quarterfinal round. It's likely most clubs would push to make this a one-year concession to allow for more teams to earn additional revenue from hosting a playoff game in successive years. The division alignment could be a one-year tweak, but making it permanent might have its advantages. For one thing, the process of interleague play would become easier to schedule. With Queensborough FC slated to join in 2021, I'm going to drop an asterisk on that real quick. We'll come back to it. One Northeast team could swing south to bring all four divisions to 9 teams. Borrowing a rotating schedule concept from the NFL, the USL could easily fit its standard 34-match slate. So if you had 9-team conferences, you would do home and home against all 8 divisional opponents. You get 16 games from there. You do one match against the other division in your conference. You'll play some at home. You'll play some away. That gives you 9 more games. You're at 25. Then you play one match against one of the other conferences' divisions, some at home, some away, for 9 games to hit that kind of 34 number that the league has been on for a while. What do you think about that, Steven?
So there's one critical nature to this, and I'm still getting the setups, that way you can see this for yourself as well while we're on the air. There is one thing that I don't necessarily agree with how he chose to do this, and that is in Jeff's illustration example, he, again, hypothesizing the idea of 8 teams in the Southeast and 9 teams in the Northeast, despite the fact that, potentially speaking, you could have another... Noting the fact that Queensborough is supposed to start play next year. Here's the problem with that. why bother having a team switch from north to south, you know, in a situation where if we do a truncated schedule that's based on this model, why would you bother doing that at all? Why not just make the Southeast team or the Southeast Division 9 teams have the Northeast Division 8 teams, and then you just let Queensborough join in and you don't have to change anything else? That's the only critical nature, the critical item that I would suggest on that particular model and that particular illustration that Jeff hypothesized.
You know, I don't know why
you would force yourself to do multiple steps.
You know how I solved that? Because, and I'll let you break down the teams in each, the proposed teams in each division from his idea, his drawing. Mm-hmm. But in the drawing currently, if I'm right, Louisville's in the Northeast division.
Yes.
Flip them back to the South. I want my home and away with Louisville City every year. And then Queensborough is your Northeast team, and then you're balanced again.
Here's the only question about that. I would love that too. However, I don't think you can take away the Indy-Louisville rivalry. I think that's it's the closest match for both of those teams.
Right.
Geographically speaking, they've also got a heck of a rivalry in general. I don't think you can take that away from either one of them.
I mean, they still have one game and possibly a playoff game.
I would think, logically speaking, I would think Loudoun would actually be the better bet for teams that would join the Southeast. Rather
logically,
than
I could see that because if you look at the way it's set up, the only like B team or 2 team in the Southeast is Atlanta United 2.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like 4 or 5 in the Northeast, which instantly means number one, we're in the hardest division, probably even out of the Western Conference too, because it's all full time professional teams. But yeah, you could do that, and it would maybe balance it out a little bit more. Or you could go with my idea, put Louisville back into the Southeast, and yeah, Indy and Louisville only get the one game, but there's a condition on it now: whoever wins the game hosts the following year. Don't just do this flip back and forth every year for that game, since it's such a big rivalry. Put a little something extra on the line for it. Or just host it in Louisville until Indy gets a real soccer stadium again.
I mean, if we want to be funny, we could do the same thing with New York Red Bulls too, just for giggles.
Yeah, true. True. So here's another thing, and I didn't put this in the notes. If this is what they're going to do, I mean, you're starting from scratch. We're gonna throw out that opening season win in New York. We're gonna throw out our only win in New York so far. I'm not okay with that. That needs to be eternalized.
Oh, that's an interesting point. I had not even considered. Would they throw out the first game? I don't see how you don't. If you're gonna end up playing a modified, a truncated schedule.
Because you had some teams that didn't even play the first weekend anyway, because that was their bye weekend.
Oh, no.
You do just have to start from scratch. That game's going to be thrown out. I mean, regardless of how they come back, that game's going to be thrown out. I don't see any other way around it.
You know, that's awful, because I didn't even think about that as a possibility up until literally right now as we're on the air. Yeah. But, man, that sucks.
So enjoy it while it lasts. The Tampa Bay Rowdies are currently undefeated, having conceded no goals. And have a win in New York. Yeah, it's rough.
An away win in New York, an away win on turf, no goals given up throughout the entire season.
You know, we used to think that the NASL's bias towards the Cosmos was bad. I think it's just as bad here. They're just doing this to wipe out our one win in New York in USL. I'm angry.
The USL or Red Bull shills.
So, just quick yes or no, would you, if they do this division kind of lineup and this sort of scheduling change, do you want that to be a one-year thing, or do you want that to be something that they do every year?
Yeah, so that's the huge nugget in that article, is how does this affect things, or how does this alter things going forward? I'm going to be honest, I thought splitting the Eastern and Western conferences in some way was always something that was going to happen. No matter how you looked at it, there was going to be a split.
Well, they said they were
going
to bring in this Central Conference at some point, but I think it makes more sense to take the conferences you do have and divide them into divisions if you're going to do this. A lot of people are going to complain. It's another, Americanization of the sport.
Again, but I would highly disagree with that, because if you go far enough down the tiers of pretty much every soccer country on the planet, when you get down to like those semi-pro levels, like the eighth division type things.
Yeah, where there's like 75 teams. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not just 20 teams in one table. There's divisions all over the place. So it actually, in the context of lower division soccer, having multiple divisions with an inflated, you know, number of teams overall perfectly fits in line with soccer leagues around the planet. That should not be a problem. I think in the context of that argument, I think there are people that have a huge problem with having multiple Division II leagues of that are completely separate entities, or Division III right. leagues that are that I think, and that's a separate argument. That's a separate issue, I think, than say having four divisions of Division II. That's fine. I don't think regionalizing things like that is not a problem to me, in my mind. I don't think, and there are people that are going to say, yeah, well, Division II in America is much better than, you know, semi-pro eighth division Britain. Well, I mean, maybe, but that's part of the debate that we're having right now, right? Is how do all of these leagues compare? I mean, you look at like Caleb Richards going to Yeovil Town and getting a couple of appearances at Yeovil Town. And he was arguably the best player we had last year. I mean,
yeah.
So we don't really know. We don't know how USL stacks up. I mean, sure, Phoenix would probably run a lot of teams for their money across the planet, but I mean, Hartford, you know, I mean, let's put it, this is the same league with Hartford and Tacoma and, you know, Orange County. And I mean, come on, like you can't compare some of this to anything happening overseas. But anyways, I think splitting this up, because it was something that was in the cards, because it was something that was arguably always going to happen, I don't mind Jeff's model here. I mean, it would be a shame to not always getting to host teams like Louisville, Pittsburgh, Indy,
right.
for example, New York. It would be a shame to not be able to host them every single time. But the fact is, this was something that was coming regardless. Whether this year, next year, 2 or 3 years from now, there's going to be a split. And quite frankly, 5 years from now, there's going to probably be another reorganization. So right. You can't, unfortunately, with how unstable American soccer is, which unfortunately, for better or worse, it still is for a variety of reasons. You can't marry yourself to any one particular format, because it will have to change as teams drop out, as, you know, brands move or whatever. It's going to alter. It's going to change. And I'm not opposed to the method that Jeff has for even carrying that into next year. It would stink to not play some of these teams twice, but I think that's a pretty good solution. And again, with Jeff's model, it introduces some Western Conference, Eastern Conference games. And that's kind of cool too.
Yeah.
I like that.
This, when Neil did his like Twitter takeover of the Rowdy's account the other day, that's one thing I mentioned to him. It was brought up last year at like the USL championship, like media days. What are the thoughts on trying to push interleague play? And if I remember correctly, Hackworth from Louisville was a big proponent of it. Wanted to see it happen. Neil said he prefers to stick with this, you know, kind of the established traditional way. We play everybody mm-hmm. in the conference, you know, twice and go with it. You know, it's one of the things like we talk about on the show. We have no idea what how good some of these teams are, or even what's going on with some of these teams, because we don't pay attention to them because we don't play them. We don't see them. I think it'd be a good thing for the league overall. I'd like to see it happen. So mm-hmm. I would be in favor of this, I think. Chris from Jacksonville said, don't slander Tacoma. Chris is a big Sounders guy. Also, that's some key proof that the little tweaks that I put in place for tonight are working, and we actually are being heard out on the internet, which is good.
Yeah, right.
I was going to say, someone just tweet us and tell us that you're listening, just because I wanted to see, but I didn't want to jinx it, so I just didn't say anything. But everything looks like it's working. I think we've solved this, which means we can start going back to guests and other stuff now.
Yes,
but I think the complaints
for those that don't know. For those that don't know, just because we like being transparent, We're experimenting with a different soundboard because apparently that may have been the issue. So we've actually been video chatting for about an hour now, a little over an hour now, with no issues whatsoever, as far as I'm aware. So
it's all I think software.
We may
based.
Have finally. Yeah, man, it wasn't me. It was not me. It was you. It was you, Mr. Cox.
It was partially you. I'm just going to say it was you anyway.
It was not me, and we proved it 2 weeks ago, and we're proving it tonight.
Look, just because saying. Everything's working doesn't mean I can't mute your microphone from right here to begin with. the last thing I want to bring up from USL Media Tours, and I happened to catch this just before you got on and we started talking. Jake Edwards was live on the Athletic's Instagram today, just a little while ago, and the guys from Steel Army, the Pittsburgh Supporters Group, put out some notes from the broadcast. I want to go back and watch all of it, but here are their notes. The original timeline was everything closed down through May 10th. That isn't going to happen. It's too early to set another date. There's no desire to put out a date they can't be sure of. They want to be on the pitch sometime this summer. They've got models being formed all the way through a September restart. Some things are considering.
Gosh.
I know, right? Some things they're considering, could they play behind closed doors? Could they play in cities that are lower risk, where there's been less exposure, less spread? They are working with the Players Association on these issues. Everything is on the table in terms of a league format. The idea to maximize the amount of regular season games with the possibility of reducing playoff games. He would be surprised if we were on a two-conference structure, so that divisional lineup seems to be likely. As of now, 34 games is possible. The desire is to play the 2020 season, have a break, and then the 2021 season. The idea of switching to the European calendar is not off the table, but is down the list. Even with the DA shut, the USL Academy is still able to go strong. The plan is to launch a full USL Academy League in 2021. Teams might be able to sign players to deals and then bring them into the first teams. USL Academy might get opened up to non-USL youth clubs. The landscape is changing constantly. About Pro Rel, if he keeps talking about it, maybe it'll happen. Wants to move it out of the theoretical. They need to be a league that innovates and differentiates. They don't have the ability to put $30 million teams on the field, so what else do they do to get people to tune in, to pay attention to it? Doesn't have a real timeline on it. He wants to see League One solidify and the business to be able to support this. The clubs be able to handle being relegated and not putting their existence in jeopardy. Expansion has never been stronger despite the pandemic. 8 to 10 serious discussions in the championship alone. Baltimore was mentioned. Cleveland wasn't, but doesn't mean that they're left out. I was just talking about a possible Baltimore USL team the other day. That'd be great. conversation of upwards of 30 cities for League One, but some may be stalled because of the pandemic. Here's the asterisk I mentioned. Queensboro is less sure about 2021 due to the pandemic, especially the impact it's having on New York City. May need to be pushed back till 2022. Clubs are thinking long-term. They are concerned, but there is no panic. Daily conversations with the USLPA, a phone call at 10:30 a.m., CBA discussion still ongoing. Dialogue has been consistent. Another meeting set for early May. Does not consider the league a developmental league or a minor league. It's a pro league, but it's not a finished article, which I think is a fair description of USL. It is a test, but this is also an opportunity. They can come out of this as a stronger league. The communication has never been better. It doesn't change their identity. I caught this last little part before you jumped in, and he talks about it. You know, he's talking to all of these teams, front office, ownership, presidents, whatever, on a daily, weekly basis, more than they would normally talk in the regular season. And it's kind of bringing, he's in his opinion, all the clubs together kind of on a more business, more personal level as well, too. So I'll go back and watch that. You can go to the Athletic's Instagram, and I think they said they're going to push the video out on there as well. So you can watch that, too. We do have the whole teams in here now for the conferences. All right, so go back. We're talking about the splitting into divisions.
Yeah, you told me to do it. I did it.
I totally did it, and I totally forgot about it. All right, go over the divisions real quick.
Okay, so, yeah, let's take a step back. Let's run through the divisions. If you didn't see the article, in the Northeast, SKC2, or Sweat Park, St. Louis, Indy, Louisville, Pittsburgh, Loudoun, Bethlehem Steel, New York Red Bulls, and Hartford. Union. Southeast, Memphis, Charlotte, North Carolina, Birmingham, Atlanta United, Charleston, of course, the Rowdies, and what was the name that you came up with for the Miami FC?
Actually Miami FC, yes. All right.
Yes,
so,
actually Miami.
So the idea was that the top two from each division would meet in the playoffs. I got to tell you, I'm looking at the teams that are in these divisions, and honestly, the top three from the Southeast can go against the top team in the Northeast, because there are way better teams in the Southeast, way fewer like MLS teams. Look, you've got Hartford, you've got the Steel are a good organization, but they've been awful on the field. Loudoun United, WizKids, Like, you've got St. Louis, who was not a playoff team last year, if I recall. Indy, Louisville, Pittsburgh. Hartford, you know, we don't know how they're going to be this year because they've had a bunch of change in the front office, the head coaching, the players. You got four or five teams, but you've got Miami, which is we kind of expect to be good. You've got the Rowdies, Charleston, Birmingham made the playoffs last year. North Carolina was in the playoffs last year. Charlotte and Memphis missed out, but give me the top three from the Southeast against the winner in the Northeast. That's your four Eastern conference right there.
No way.
The Southeast is where it's at.
No. Indy, Louisville, Pittsburgh, and New York are great, great teams. That's a great.
But just imagine how exciting it would be, like if you're watching the Northeast Division, knowing only one of those teams gets in the playoffs.
Yeah, but the problem is that I would actually take those four teams, and I think the only team, only one team in the Southeast is actually on that level, and that's the Rowdies. I don't think anybody else in the Southeast outside of the Rowdies can legitimately take those four teams on one-on-one and expect victories, what, at least over half the time.
I mean, you've got to figure in, Louisville's going to be playing in a real stadium with a real playing surface now. It's going to take them a while to get used to playing on a regular width field that doesn't have craters in the middle of it. So they could be awful for all we know.
This is worth pointing out. One of the things that was mentioned in an article with Lewis Hilton, I believe it came out today or yesterday, players are training together, but it's only two players at a time.
Yeah, and it's
but
no tactical because, stuff, just kind of ball and on the ball and,
correct,
and cardio stuff.
But Louisville Stadium is done. They got it. It's finished. They were able to complete construction regardless, which means hypothetically Louisville could be having those players playing on that field to get used to that field and that new surface and the new dimensions and the background and what that would look
except
like, especially
training,
and the lighting for that matter.
But all the practices are shut down. There's no group trainings right now, so they can't be.
There's no group training, but you're allowed to train in pairs. So you're allowed to still have sessions in pairs as players with a member of the staff there to supervise or whatever. So, and especially considering that we're looking at another, 2 months of this crap of not being able to be together and, you know, enjoying soccer.
2 months? I'm just going to start going in the backyard.
Okay, so as an aside, I can't wait to see what TIFOs are going to look like coming out of the oh, man.
We just need like a giant TIFO of a toilet paper.
It'd be like the players holding it up like a trophy.
Instead of pulling it up on the the pulleys, we have to like unroll it like it's a roll of toilet paper. That's how the first one has to be done.
People are throwing toilet paper rolls instead of streamer rolls. This is going to be insane.
If you are looking for something else to do in this time, we've got a supporter of the show, a fan of the show, a friend of all of us, a yeller of Young Marines, yeller at Young Marines. Steven, what's our buddy Kevin doing?
So Kevin Vicario is going to be running a online football manager type league. It actually starts tomorrow, April 16th. But if you are interested in participating, he's capable of handling more teams and having more players play participate. He directly invited me a week ago. I had to turn him down because I don't do video or fantasy soccer of any kind whatsoever. So I actually had to decline, unfortunately.
So I've started doing the playing actual Football Manager because it was I have the like the Xbox Game Pass, which you can download. Like it's, yeah. It covers PC and I still I plug my 360 back in.
Oh, okay.
It's one of the games you could download on there. I went through a couple game weeks and it's one of the, you know, I know if I played enough, I get used to it. There's so damn much to it. Because he invited me too the other day, and I was like, you know, honestly, if I had the time to do it, I'd love to do it. Because I don't know for sure, but I suspect he's using a similar system a friend of mine was playing in a couple years. Maybe it's the mm-hmm. same one. I don't know. But it does sound like a lot of fun. And if I had the time, I would definitely try and do that. But yeah, get it, Kevin, on Twitter at Kuvan, KUVAN Marine. Let him know if you're interested. He'll definitely accept some more. And the last thing I wanted to do, I saw this on Twitter today. I put it out there from the podcast account, got some answers from people that follow us. I'm going to read some of them off, but I want to get your answer and throw in my answer as well, too. One player that you wish had never left the team.
So this is such a loaded question, right? Because there's some like very obvious picks. There's some not so obvious picks. And it also kind of comes to the question of like how you decide players in context of, are we talking physical capacity or is it tactical acumen? Is it maybe players that impacted a specific team during that year or during that couple of years that maybe could have impacted things for the next couple after that? Oh, this is such a hard decision. I have to pick the player that, when we were doing our Rowdy's Best 11 for the decade, was my kind of weird sneak-in pick, that a player that I've loved since day one, Daniel Antoniuk. I will have to go with that pick. That man had the best goals-to-minutes ratio, I'm pretty sure, of any player in the Rowdy's modern era. I have to go with him.
You are not the only one to pick Dan Antoniuk.
He was so consistent, and I would have loved to have had him off the bench that following year.
All right, let me go through so the responses we got, and then I'll give you mine, and then we will wrap it up and call it a night. Brett at St. Pete Flux, Luke Mulholland. I'm betting that's a popular choice. At Coach_Ian_19, Ian, President of Skyway Casuals, gotta be Darnell King for me. Used to love watching him bomb up the wing. Cody Allinson, Damian Lowe, faux show. Mm-hmm. I think I saw Carlos giving Damian Lowe some love too. Mm-hmm. Aaron Retke's from the Mob, Fafa Picall.
Yes,
I do like me some Fafa.
Yes,
I do. Francis. Mr. Navoa, Dan Antoniuk. I don't want to... So, you know, like, the temptations there is there to be, like, Georgie. But, like, you know, Georgie didn't leave. Like, Georgie retired.
Yeah.
Luke would be a good shout.
Yes.
Luke's a guy that...
He's my third place okay. pick.
Fafa? I mean, if Fafa could have stayed here and developed into the player that he is now, like, getting to watch him play for... Oh, yeah. Oh. Fafa would be great. Never really got the full opportunity. I think we all agree on that. The time he was here, I'm going to go more recent, and a lot of people are going to go, all right, Matt, we know you're going to say Jochen Graf. And it's true. I'd love to have Jochen Graf on the club too, but I'm going to count him out as he's retired as well. But I would have had the love to have had Jochen stay, because that would have meant that everything would have gone more successfully. But you know, dude is still in the area. We're going to have him back on the show sometime now that we maybe have worked technical issues out. But I'm going to take a guy who has developed. He was a good player here when he was here and got kind of caught up in the mix when changes happened. Has moved on and has become a great player elsewhere in this league. You've probably figured it out by now. Give me back Jack Blake. Give me, yep. Like, there's so many guys that you could put in here.
Oh, my
and it's,
God.
Like, it's whether, because Brown? They're fan favorites, dude, because, like, the way they worked or the results they got. I'm going to kind of go with a little bit of both and give me back Jack Blake.
That's a great pick. I mean, there's a play. Deshaun Brown. Could you imagine if we had Deshaun Brown still on this team? There is an interesting debate in my
first
head about
half of
Jeff
last
Antonella.
Season, Deshaun Brown, not last half of last season, Deshaun Brown.
Well, this is true. But like, there's players like in my mind, like Jeff Atnella, for example. Like, what if we had him for another couple of years after that? But here's the thing, though, is that we actually didn't degrade our goalkeeping performance after he left. Because what was it? Was it Restrepo that was
Restrepo,
in net
and
after
then
he was
Pickens
gone?
after Restrepo got hurt.
We didn't go down in quality and keeper, even though we left, you know, a championship winning goalkeeper. One player that did great things after he left here that I would have killed to have seen more seasons of was Pascal Millian.
Yes.
Oh my God, he was so good.
Well, he won the league, and did he win the cup in Ireland too? I know he won the league with Sligo.
And yeah, and then after that, he like did a season somewhere, and then he came back and played in Jacksonville, and then he was in Lakeland. He did a season in Lakeland with the Tropics.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think this is the final year he finally retired from the game. But I mean, oh, dude, he was lighting up leagues all over the planet, man. He was great. Absolutely great. Oh, I love Pascal Millian.
You want another deep cut?
Sure.
Tsuyoshi Yoshitake.
Yes.
When he left here, he was the leading scorer on the team. It turned out okay.
Dude,
we won the league that year, won the championship.
Him.
But man, to have him, yeah.
Let me just put it this way. Yoshi would have been great just to have for the rest of that season, let alone a season beyond that. Oh my God, I would have killed to have had him play just that year. So many good players have come through our ranks. It is scary.
Yeah,
how many
have.
Good players. And it's funny because you get through these MLS snobs or these Euro snobs that look at the names that we're ringing up, right? You and I and Aaron and Frank and these guys, everybody's like people that have been around a long time. We're throwing out these names and like to us, these guys are on pedestals because they work their heart out, you know, to maintain and be able to play this game at a pro level. And it's not easy to do regardless of the pro level they play in. And we're over here just ringing these guys' names out. Oh, man, do you remember when Fafa Picoult was 18 years old and playing on the wing of the Rowdies, and he did, like, absolutely nothing, and then he, like, you know, 7 years later turns into a U.S. national team player, right? Like, we're freaking out about that. Players like Ben Sweat, for example, you know, getting Ben Sweat on the Rowdies, and he was getting national team appearances. But then you talk to some of these guys that are like, yeah, but all of those players are not good in the grand scheme of things. And it's like, that's not the point. That's not the point. Like, you're not going to get these like $50 million players to come through the Rowdies at 19 years old that are going to win club World Cup championships in 2021. That's
you mean
just
we
not
don't have
happen.
A team full of Ronaldos? Oh my God.
You listen here. Yeah,
what
right? Like, I just, it's not the point, you know? It's just. Anybody can come into this uniform, be a great player, and we will put them on a pedestal for life. You know, I mean, we're talking players like, you know, Aaron King after the great goal scoring year that he had in 2010. You know, one of my favorite players from the Rowdies is Aaron King of all guys. And I love him, you know. I mean, I remember when Stanley Niazamba was running around the field and I'm like, he was fun to watch.
Can we get one more run out for Long Tan?
Yes! Mosey Giorio.
Oh, God.
Daryl Sattler.
I was just going to say, if you look at like the history of the Rowdies' goalkeeping position, it's a history of people get a chance because of injury, and it turns out pretty well. Like, if Sattler doesn't get hurt, Atenella doesn't come in and play.
Yeah.
Doesn't earn himself. We don't have that fairy tale ending for the soccer bowl. He doesn't play his way into MLS. He leaves and Restrepo gets a chance. And Restrepo, you know, is known for that huge save in the Open Cup game against Seattle. Played great for us. He gets hurt. The team goes out and gets Matt Pickens.
We should just do a whole episode reminiscing of the first 5 years or something like that. Like, that should just be like the whole episode. Just run through the players that were there, where they went to. You know, what players were leading stats, just for giggles.
So we got time to plan that out. We could do that. Apparently, we have 2 more months at least of games
come
to
on,
talk
let's
about.
Be real.
So, we love yous. Who you got?
My we love you is going to go from David from Tampa on Twitter, who is one of our two guys in EUSL. I'm shouting him out to give him some encouragement. I know that he's a little down on himself, especially watching Carlos rip teams back and forth. David, we love you. We know you're doing everything you can, and we're all having fun watching you. You're not bad at all. Don't ever put yourself down if you're not undefeated like Carlos is, because Carlos is kind of a freak of nature, and that's just how we love him. But no, David, you're my we love you for the game or for the show today. keep doing what you're doing. You're doing great.
I'm going to send this one out to good friend of the show, frequent interviewee of the site, the birthday boy himself, green and gold at heart, Rob Stone. Happy birthday, brother. All right, let's wrap this up and send it out of here.
First of all, we want to thank Wolfface, Radio St. Pete, and Shamrock Pub for all of their contributions and support for our radio show and our podcast.
I'd like to thank everybody who tunes in either live tonight or listens to this later on podcast. I don't know if I should feel bad or just consider it part of the condition that we're in now that no one mentioned to me that I never published the last episode that we did 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't much missed. It was one of those we probably should have skipped that week anyway. But you guys who do listen, who tune in, please continue to share, subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you find this show, wherever you listen to it at, or just go and fake it. That's okay, too. We appreciate it. It puts us out in front of other people who may enjoy listening to this as well.
Thanks to everybody that supports us on Patreon. Again, starting from $1 a month, you guys can become a true supporter of the show. It allows us to be able to do the things that we do here without having it all necessarily come out directly from our pockets. It does really, really appreciate. In fact, it's one of the things that we're doing right now, trying to figure out our technical situation. Some of the solutions are coming out of those Patreon donations. So we appreciate what you guys do with that. So please keep supporting if you can. It's very much appreciated.
Thank you to our sponsor at Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com, or go on out and be a coronavirus ultra. Get your face mask and be super cool looking as well.
Yes, get your face mask from Roughneck Scarves. That'd be great. And tell them that we sent you just because it'd be cool. If you are tired of that same old uniform and the cookie cutter templates from Nike and Adidas, and you're looking for something unique, completely customary for your youth club, maybe it's your Sunday league squad, an adult weekday league, or a pro team even, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. As an addendum to that, I did actually hear, I know of a couple guys that have purchased stuff from Icarus FC. They said that they enjoyed it. It's good quality material, and they were able to come up with some pretty cool designs. So, by all means, if you are looking to create something custom, that's a great place to start.
I was just going to say, I follow them along on Twitter. They put out a line, you know, and everyone kind of throws out, oh, here's a concept. Like, they actually manufactured these and did pre-sales and sold them for a Mesopotamian Premier League, featuring like Babylon, Nineveh. Like, there was like 7 or 8 teams, and they were I ended up not doing it, but I very nearly bought like 2 or 3 of the jerseys because the designs were incredible. Like, I thought Nineveh looked really good. There were a couple out there. They were really cool. So check them out. Give them a look and see, because they're doing some pretty cool stuff. I want to get some stuff from them eventually after I buy a bunch of other stuff that I need. Kind of more importantly, first, I'm trying to be logical about this, even though I don't want to. All right, that's it for this week. If another content bomb explodes next Wednesday, then maybe we'll come back on and do a show, but probably not. If not, then we will be back on the 29th. We'll round out April before we head into another month that looks exactly the same, apparently, but just has a different name on the front of it. Steven, it's been fun. It was nice to have a pre-game dinner with you before we just both ended up eating our meals, our dinner before we went live. It was like having a dinner with somebody else besides the same old people every night. It makes it sound like I don't like my family. I mostly do, more than they like me, probably. But we'll talk soon. And
sounds like a plan. Go Rowdies. Keep in shape, guys. Don't sit around the house and do absolutely nothing every day if you can help it. And we will see you guys the next time we do a show. So
seriously, even my lazy self has been doing like 5K walks every other day. Go do something. Get out of the house. Get off the couch.
For me, it's do as I say, not as I do, because I'm basically walking to my post office box and that's it.
Even
that's
now, I'm doing
physical activity.
Do something. All right, we will talk to you guys soon. See ya. The radish one here, the radish one there, they get all around. The radish one here, the radish one there, set the pool around.